following program is brought to you in living color.
Must be the color.
You are listening to the Monday Afternoon Show. This is Melinda Broughton. You were just listening to Pink Floyd, Any Color You Like, followed by an excerpt from Bob Dylan's radio show and Cat Power. It's my segue into this afternoon's show on color. We're going to be hearing interviews with a few local artists. Well, one's from New Paltz, but New York-based artists. First with Diane Townsend and Judah Catalan, the couple behind Townsend Pastels right here in Hudson. And later, Paula Cusera, the owner of White Barn Sheep and Wool, down in New Paltz. She raises her own sheep and makes wool for knitting and felting. She also has her own knit shop down in New Paltz and a lot of other things, which you'll be hearing about. So we're going to segue now into an interview with Diane and Joda from Townsend Pastels right here in Hudson. I interviewed them in their studios and asked them to try as best as possible to describe the colors they were making or seeing for the radio. Diane and Joda would open up huge drawers that looked like vibrating color bars, the slightest gradation ranging from whites throughout what seemed like the entire color spectrum and onto black. So I hope you enjoy this interview about Townsend Pastels on WGXC, the Monday Afternoon Show.
Started from a dumpster.
Okay, so what do you mean?
Well, it was in like 1971. I lived in Lower Manhattan in Soho, what is now Soho, where a lot of industries were going out of business. They were moving out of Manhattan. So they were throwing stuff in the dumpster, especially the printing industry. Mm-hmm. And so I was out of college. I went to Queens College, and then when I got out, I had plenty of time and had a studio, and I found a whole dumpster full of pigments, and I spent about 3 days cleaning it out. I took it back to my studio, which I shared partially with a conservationist, an Italian man named Piero Mannoni, who's, I think, back in Italy now, and he translated 15th century formula for how to make pastels. It was written by a woman, and I don't remember her name, but anyway, it was from one of his manuals that he used. So he translated both the process and the formula, and that's how I did it. So I just started doing it basically for myself. And then word got around, and people like Chuck Close and Joel Shapiro, people like that, bought directly from me. But I didn't sell to art supply stores until 1990-something.
Wow, so you did it for 20 years?
Yeah, I was teaching, and I had a gallery, and I was doing, it was a lot cheaper to live, low rent, things like that, that you can't possibly do now.
So what kind of colors were you making initially?
Boy, basic colors like your, black, white, earth, ultramarine, blue, violet, you know, the simple colors. And actually, all the pigments we use are very simple in their origin. I guess we've got about 35 colors, basic pigments, and they're all like, all the earth colors like Mars yellow and red oxide, Mars black, ivory black like that, titanium white, and then ultramarine blues, and then a phthalos, Prussian, green oxide, some cadmiums, naphthals, quinacridones, things like that, and then everything else from there is mixtures of those. So we don't have any funny colors because I really don't know anything about them. We just have classic kind of artists' pigments that we buy in the world market.
But no fillers. We use pigments in its pure form, and then it's with a mixture of pigments, and when you see them, you'll recognize also that the idea was that pigments will speak in their own language, so that some are hard, some are soft, as long as they write, but you can see, you'll touch, one is light, one is very heavy, one is metal-based, one is organic-based, and you'll see that, 500 or some pigments.
And I'll turn the light in here. Yeah, we manufacture right out here in this room. It's our table. It's really a two-person operation. here's the pigments. You can see, you know, green oxide. We just keep them in tubs. We buy them in 55-pound bags, and then we transfer them to these because it's easy to get the lid in and out. And we just scoop them into a wet container, and that way we don't really have any dust. It's, people think we're always engulfed in a cloud of dust, and it's not. We keep it wet all the time. And I've stayed with my original, you know, out of the dumpster technique. It's got to be that raw material. It gets mixed with tragacanth gum, which is what pharmacists used to use to hold pills together. What I have a lot of practice with is mixing colors. What pigments go together, work well together. Mm-hmm. That's where I guess my expertise would be. And how much pumice, how much gum. You have to change the recipe for every color.
Yes, because they behave differently. They mix differently, they behave differently. Some want to mix, some don't want to mix. It's a little bit like people. So how do you mix them, you know, to get a society? You know, you get all kind of behavior that you don't want to at times.
Is there a certain color that is unruly?
Yeah.
Yes.
This quinacridone magenta is a bad word. And it's because the molecules are like platelets. They're things, they resist adhesion, they resist. And if you do wet them and they dry without adding pumice or something like that to keep it open, it'll be a brick. Same thing with doxazine purple, same thing with naphthals. The reds and some of the greens, like the phthalos, tend to be very hard. Hmm. Whereas the Mars violet and ultramarine violet is super soft and will crumble in a second.
You look at them and they'll fall apart.
Yeah. And then these are these are the soft form. These are sort of, I designed these. These are my original pastels, and they fit my hand, and I think they're a good size for drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we make, I think, 400 colors, but that includes shades.
Uh-huh.
It's like there are 120 colors in the soft form with light, medium, and dark shade.
Of each?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
So 360 plus the exotic, which are the, this makes 400 and some. And then we have this shape, which is the, you see, they're square and they can take a little bit more pressure, you know. The idea, we called them Terra Gest, based on the word gesture, but everybody started to call it terrage as a French word. Well, people will consider French word a little bit better than Terra Gest, so we left it.
You know the John Maher Hotel, it's like that. You've seen those names from hotels and stuff. This is like Terra Gest. It's like Earth Gesture. I mean, it's really, I'm not very good at names. I'm really not. So it's going to be like, I don't think of colors like coffee or, you know.
Just a color.
It's just ultramarine blue. Okay, ultramarine blue light, Prussian, cadmium red, cadmium yellow. It's
because it's a tool.
Yeah.
The whole idea that we wanted to break away from
tool.
The preciousness.
It's not a boutique. It's a tool. These are rough. They can take pressure. You can draw on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they have been tested, blind tested, against the top, and they came number one in terms of saturation of pigment.
Really?
Because we don't, it's just the two of us. And we, so everything goes into the pigment, into the pastel, not into advertisement or any of that.
So this is a drawer of cadmiums. And I mean, if it's cadmium, there's nothing in it. In other words, I don't support a cadmium with a less expensive red.
Mm-hmm.
It's pure cadmium.
Oh, wow.
This happens to be a cadmium yellow. And cadmium yellow deep, I think, and that is what it is. I mean, it's not like cut with anything.
Mm-hmm.
We add pumice to make them gritty so they move.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, I think, a special thing about our pastels is that they are very densely pigmented, and the pumice grips the paper, and they move that way. And we worked with Wolf Kahn on that. He was very kind of instrumental and kept saying more pumice, make it grittier. So it tears open the paper. The idea that you don't need a ground, like some of these pastels have a gritty surface painted on them, like a lot of pastel artists like to use sandpaper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Wolf's idea was that you don't need to do that. You can work on a soft paper and rupture the fibers of the paper and push the pastel into it, and the pumice helps you facilitate that. Now, that solves the big problem of pastel, which is always fixative, you know, how to get it to stay on the paper.
This is a crazy color, this one.
Yeah, yeah. This is probably my favorite color, number 27. It's one of those. Okay, I've got to tell you the story how this color came to be. I went to the Metropolitan Museum to see Jackie Onassis's dress, her costume show.
Yeah.
And I saw this chartreuse dress that she wore that just blew me away. It was this unbelievable silk. And I try to match that color. So that's where this comes from.
Is it from memory, or do you have a visual of her dress as well?
It's memory. Yeah. Oh, I remember the dress. I remember exactly. I mean, this is my memory of it, mm-hmm. which probably changes all the time. But basically, it's a chartreuse. And I make it with yellow and violet. The dark colors I created, I'm pushing these off blacks. They're down here. I saw an exhibit of Navajo rugs from the 19th century, and I just flipped out over the fibers. And when you look at those rugs, there's, you know, a little bit red and a little bit blue, but you can barely tell the difference. And that's inspired a lot of the pastels. They're just hair-like differences. But I think that makes color very exciting when your eye tries to find an edge and then it starts to vibrate. It really makes things come alive. So I do the same thing with blacks and the same thing with whites. Like we make these, all these off-whites.
It's a tiny bit, but when you draw with it, you can tell the difference.
Right.
When you look at it, sometimes pull our eyes out. Mm-hmm. But when you draw, then you see the difference.
Well, the rule I have in this business is color is mutable. It changes. It's relative to what it's next to. So you're going to read a red depending on what's around that red. If you place it next to a green, it'll look one way. If you place it next to another red, it'll look another way. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that changing, shifting quality. That's very important in my artwork, that sort of tentative unsureness, you know, sort of elusive. I like to dwell in that territory, and I think it's a part of the mystery, and the way its color moves, that if you ask me about it.
Oh, it's a patch.
Or the brochure? Yeah,
the
brochure.
Oh, yeah.
You see, here it is, and it's not a full color chart. Well, that's what Anne was talking about. One color lived next to another.
Mm-hmm.
That's how she designed it and got into a lot of trouble because people want all the greens next to all the greens and all the yellows. And you can see she didn't do that.
But I would go and want to buy this
chartreuse. Now you got it.
Yes, because you see the chartreuse for what it is. It's next to a purple. It's next to a green. So that relativity of color tells you more about that.
But if it's next to this, it's very hard to see it. So the idea is to loosen people up a little bit in relationship to color. What is color? What does it mean? You know, musicians talk about color endlessly. And when it comes to musicians and visual is not a good... They usually are visually not very sophisticated as a crowd.
Musicians.
Yes, but they talk about color. God is they solve the problems of the universe with color. But it's in relationship to sound. I think when musicians talk about color, when painters or artists talk about color, they're not... It's both use the word color, but each one means the different things. But call it the same sound, color, everybody thinks we are talking about the same thing. Yeah. And what you basically recognize, we don't see color the same way. And people say, but this is blue. What do you mean by blue? It's blue to you, and to me, it's blue, but. And that opens a whole discussion, what is color?
Mm-hmm.
And what does it mean? And wood. It's very relative, and that the color chart should show you that. It's not a color chart, it's representation of some of what's in the drawers, mm-hmm. how they live next to each other.
When I started making them in the 70s, I didn't have a label, I didn't have a name. I mean, of course, I would say, well, this is cadmium red, or this is ultramarine blue, and this is white, but I always assumed people could see that.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, we say red, how many reds are there out there? How many blues? How many greens? And yet we use the word green. I want a green. Okay. How many? And if people recognize that it colors, it's like anything else. Once you get to it, it becomes a field in itself. You know, a language. It's a whole world, not just one little item. And the idea was that people will use them and get a little bit freer with them.
I would say one word about the logo here. Mm-hmm. That's my drawing. I did that in the 70s of four of my pastels. That's the way they looked, those odd shapes. And it's a pen and ink drawing. I used to really like the drawings by Henry Moore. Henry Moore's drawings, you know, those figures in the underground during the war.
Yeah.
And there were all those figures he did in the shelters that looked like they're mummies. They looked like they're wrapped. And that's sort of how I saw the pastels, as embodying, almost as, you know, forms embodying that energy of a color. You know, when you talk about color, it can be very abstract, and as you know, abstract things defy language.
But if you look at colors, they vibrate differently. So if you talk about energy, you talk about vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you touch them, you recognize some are very heavy and some are very light, but they vibrate differently. And they mix very differently, and they speak in their own language. We think of them speaking in a uniformed language, the colors, and it's not true. Especially in pastel forms. You know, when you mix oil paint, that's a different story, because they're mixed,
right.
They have a big bodies that carries them. But with the pastels, they do tend to want to speak in their own language if you don't uniform them. If you uniform them, that means you put a lot of body in there, that the pigment is secondary, so to speak, to the body that carries that pigment.
The medium.
Yeah.
Yes, and our idea was that the pigment will carry the day. And as a result, you have to learn to respect the quirkiness of each pigment.
Yeah.
We wanted uniform behavior. Well, the material itself is not uniform. Some are very heavy, some are very dense.
Yeah, we could make a nice uniform pastel if we mixed up a batch of chalk and, mm-hmm. and pumice and gum, I mean, in a particular way, and then colored it with pigment. It could be very nice to write with,
mm-hmm.
and very even, but it wouldn't express that nature of each pigment. Like the red will be gritty, Mars violet is going to be like butter. They're not all like butter. Not all pigments are like that at all.
You were listening to WGXC, the Monday Afternoon Show. That was Diane Townsend and Joda Catalan from Townsend Pastels right here in Hudson. They spoke about the origins of Townsend pastels and their technique, the handmade quality, and took us into a world of color, opening up multiple drawers and talking about the origins of a lot of their colors. So it was a really fascinating interview. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Diane and Joda. If you'd like to know more about Townsend pastels, you can go to their website, townsendpastels.com. Or if you actually want to see their pastels, they're currently being sold at Sketch, the art store on 7th and Warren here in Hudson.